Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. There's so much news out there today. The NYPD is outside Columbia. They've set a 2 p.m. deadline for these protesters to vacate the encampment. And it's anyone's guess if they're going to follow those new rules. I would say no.
I'm going to say no.
I'm getting the sense. Again, there are ways that we could make this go a little bit faster. Some of the texters have brought up cutting out the Wi-Fi, the outside Wi-Fi at these schools. I think that's a great idea. And also the sprinkler system we've seen is very effective. But I'm very excited right now. Between 1 and 2, the court gets a little lunch break. Turtle Boy, Aiden Kearney, is here. Aiden, you've been tweeting from the Karen Reed trial. Today is really day one as far as hearing these cases. Seems like there's already been a lot of bombshells. Can you fill us in on what's going on?
Oh, yeah, a lot of bombshells. So the prosecution has been, you know, we've been told the whole time that they have some big bombshell. Wait till trial, something comes out. All they talked about, Adam Lally, in his dry, boring substitute teacher voice, was the same nonsense we've been hearing about for the last year, about how many, you know, they were at the waterfall, and then there were this. Nobody cares about any of that. They specifically ignore all the facts of the case. And then the defense got up there, and boy, did they have some newfound news on top of. They explained to the jury everything that we've been going over, all the evidence that this is an obvious cover-up. That was actually David Yannetti's first words, is this was a cover-up. Karen Reed was framed. We were told they couldn't use the third-party culprit defense in their opening, but that's all he did, and they just let it happen. It was great. We also found out that Michael Proctor, the lead detective in this case, who was close family friends with the Alberts, specifically said that he would not be investigating Brian Albert, whose front yard John O'Keefe's body was found on, because he's, quote, a Boston police officer. We also found out in text messages that he called Karen Reed the C word. He also said that he hopes that Karen Reed kills herself. The lead detective said that in a text message to a friend that the FBI uncovered in their investigation, that he hopes Karen Reed killed herself. And perhaps most grossly and most astonishing, he told his friend that he was looking for naked pictures of Karen Reed on her phone, which he did not have directions from a judge to go through. They didn't even have permission to go through the phone, and he was looking for naked photographs of her.
Ugh, good God. Yeah. And I have a question, Aiden. You've been talking about Paul O'Keefe, I think, right? He was the first person that was on the witness stand?
That's correct. John's brother.
Yeah. So give us a little information, because I guess he was setting the scene of Karen Reed's reaction after the fact, after she allegedly, according to the prosecution, ran over John O'Keefe and killed him with her car. But what you were trying to say on social media is that it wasn't making the case that the prosecution thought it was making it. In your opinion, it actually was painting her in a good light.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's saying that that she was in the hospital and that she was, distraught and saying, is he alive, screaming. That's how somebody who cares about somebody reacts to something like that. A human being acts like that when they find out their boyfriend is dead. Like, she's freaking out. This is new to her. Wait until you see, which I've heard, maybe I haven't seen it, the police dash cam video from the Canton Police Department, and watch how Jennifer McCabe reacts to finding John O'Keefe's body. She turns her back to John when his body is wheeled out of there. It's disgusting. She shows no emotion whatsoever, almost like she knew he was there. The only thing Jennifer McCabe is concerned with is speaking directly to the police so that she can get it in their mind that Karen Reed did this. They also talked about how John said that they got in a fight because Karen bought the kids Dunkin' Donuts all the time, and John didn't want them to be spoiled. These kids loved Karen Reed. Karen Reed was a great influence in their life. They talked about how John got his daughter into Bishop Fee in high school, that he wanted her to go there, and he was so happy that she was going to Catholic school there. Well, What happened a year after John died? They took her out of there and they put her into Canton High School so that she could be around the McAlbert children and that they could brainwash these kids with propaganda that Karen Reed, the woman who loved them and took care of them for 2 years, was actually a murderer. How evil is that?
Yeah, Aiden, I want you, I'm speaking with Turtle Boy. He's obviously at the forefront of this Karen Reed case. He was one of the first people to really dig into this, and it's now become a nationwide story, a phenomenon. People are just obsessed with Karen Reed and whether or not she killed John O'Keefe. And Aiden Kearney is joining the show now to talk about it with us. Aiden, I know you've gone over this a million times with us. I've encouraged people to listen back to old podcasts to get the full story. But I would love if really quickly, could you just explain to people the connection between these three last names, Proctor, Albert, and McCabe? How do they all coincide?
Michael Proctor is the lead detective in the case. He has known the Albert family and been extremely close to them for almost 2 decades now. His family, his mother refers to the Alberts as a second family. The Alberts are the people whose front lawn John's body showed up at. The McCabes are also family members of the McAlberts with the Alberts through marriage. Brian Albert's wife is Nicole Albert, and her sister is Jennifer McCabe. Jennifer McCabe was inside the house that night, and her family also is friends with the Proctors because yours truly on September 25th first reported that we got a picture of Jennifer McCabe's car parked at the Proctor household. I posted that. I said, here they are. We ran the license plates. We confirmed that these cars do belong to them. They have a pre-existing relationship. Because I reported that, I was charged with a felony count of conspiracy to commit witness intimidation because I proved that the main witness in a murder case is socializing at the house of the lead detective.
Aiden, I want to ask you, you mentioned earlier that even though we had been told or there had been reports out that the judge had ruled she was going to allow a third party culprit defense in cross-examination and things like that, but she didn't want it in the opening statement. And you said that Karen Reed's lawyers did it anyway, and they don't really care. It seems like the judge allowed it. Does that give you hope that going forward, this might not be as stop and start as some people think it was going to be? A lot of people thought, oh, this is going to be, you know, everything that gets brought up is going to be contested. There's going to be side panels. Based off what you've seen today, I know it's early on, but do you think this means that maybe things could actually go in Karen Reed's favor more than people thought?
That is exactly how I felt, actually. You just described it perfectly. I was a little bit worried that there would be a lot of objections, there would be a lot of sidebars, that every time they got momentum going, showing what actually happened there, that the prosecution would, you know, use this to basically, you know, kill their momentum, right, and silence them. But as we saw today in that amazing 45-minute monologue by David Unetti, they have been given a lot of, kind of free rein here to share their ideas. He didn't name any specific names. He didn't say so-and-so killed this person. He just pointed out all of the other stuff. The fact that these people have known each other a long time, that he was clearly beaten inside the house. He didn't say who beat him, but that someone did. So it looks like they've kind of found a way around this ruling that you can't mention the third, and they're going to find ways around everything. If you're not familiar with the Karen Reed case, just watch what's going to happen in the next 6 to 8 weeks. Your jaw will drop and you're going to end this and you're going to say Turtle Boy was right. And he went to jail for 60 days because he reported the truth about what happened here.
Turtle Boy, I have one more question and then I'm going to let you actually take your lunch break because you're in for a long couple days here. My next question for you involves these witnesses. Do you expect, and I'm sure if I had more familiarity with how these court trials usually play out, I would know this, but do you expect that they're going to bring forward the star witnesses earlier on or later on? Are they going to try to end with them? Like, are we going to be hearing from Jennifer McCabe sooner or later?
That's a good question. I'm assuming they're going to start with character stuff first. They're going to try to bring on, Paul O'Keefe and other people like that who are just going to talk about the extent of their relationship. Probably these random people who saw them in Aruba and allegedly saw them fighting. And then I'm going to guess they don't want to bring Jennifer McCabe up. She's going to be bad. I'm sure they're really worried about that.
Yeah, and a last question for you, Aiden. What is the vibe outside the courthouse? I know that the Karen Reed protesters, the Free Karen Reed crowd, that they have been ordered to stay like 200 feet away. But as far as compared to last week in juror selection, is set the scene for us. What's going on outside?
It's electric. It's a beautiful scene out there. I was there all morning. There are so many great people, hundreds of people, all wearing pink for Karen Reed. You know, there is a 200-foot buffer zone, but, you know, you can go inside the zone. You just can't, quote-unquote, demonstrate, whatever that means. And we're all wearing pink, and we all know what that signifies. So we're out there, and we are, you know, I guess you just can't give – you can't say the words Free Karen Reed inside those that zone, but you certainly can say it outside of it. And it's just a – I felt so much energy and love in Dedham this morning when I was at the courthouse.
And Turtle Boy, actually, I know I keep saying last question. This is my for real last question. I know you're live tweeting this, and that's going to be a great resource for people to keep up with what's going on. But what's your plan as far as blogging goes? Are you going to be writing this at the end of the day? Like, can people check it out at a certain time? How's that going to work?
Yeah, I'll be doing a daily write-up probably at the end of the day, just a recap of the day's proceedings, you know, trial day, day one, whatever. And then I do my usual show every Tuesday and Saturday night at 9 p.m.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Turtle Boy. If you, whenever you want, I told him, I said, you got an open line here because we want to know what's going on in the Karen Reed case. It has taken over the country. And if you want to follow Turtle Boy and get some of these tweets, it's at Dr. Turtle Boy. That's where he's putting up all of the latest, including these opening statements, which I guess were pretty damning for the prosecution and the judge let it happen, which is good news for Karen Reed. We'll be right back. We got a lot to talk about, so don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
I mentioned earlier that 802 had a good idea about shutting off the Wi-Fi, and obviously at Harvard we had the sprinkler situation that really seemed to throw a wrench in the protesters' plans. They didn't like their tents getting wet. And these are all good ideas, like how we could come to a resolution faster. Sprinklers, ending the Wi-Fi. I think ending the snack services could be huge. I've heard about the $17 jars of nuts and the veggie sandwiches and the Dunkin' Donuts coffee and the just all sorts of sweet treats. If we ended that at these encampments, that might also shorten things up a little bit. I don't know, though. I don't know what would be the most effective. And that leads me to another question, which is who's providing all of this? Like the tents. Libby Emin said that on Friday. All these tents look exactly alike. Who's providing the tents? Who's providing the snacks? But overall, and at the Fashion Institute where they were having protests, because it's become quite fashionable, you know, to protest Israel, they were chanting, let them eat, because they were trying to have pizza delivered. So it does seem like the food part of it is a huge component. I don't know if these protesters, they're not afraid of disciplinary action. They're not thrilled with the sprinklers. I think the Wi-Fi might be the best bet. Like, because if you're protesting, right, Jared, and you're not able to put it on social media, for these young people, that's a huge part of it. Like we saw with the Columbia ringleader who was talking about how Zionists don't deserve to live and how we should all be very grateful that he's not murdering Zionists on the daily. He filmed that video and put it up all on his own. So I think filming themselves and putting it on social media is a huge part of this. And if they weren't able to upload their videos protesting Bibi Netanyahu, I just don't, I think that would kill the morale a little bit.
Yeah, what's the point of protesting at that point if you can't
put it on
Instagram? The video of yourself protesting? I mean, how are people going to know that you're protesting?
That's exactly
what
I'm thinking.
It's not even worth it. I mean, they'll just send the pizza to Relief over there and skip on out of there.
Today's poll question is brought to you by J.J. Manning Auctioneers. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is did Kristi Noem eliminate herself from VP contention with her dog story.
Yes, I do think that it's just an unnecessary piece of baggage for someone to have who's in the running to be VP, especially when you have a lot of great contenders. You have Dr. Ben Carson. You now have Ron DeSantis. I mean, he talked about meeting up with Trump. I know they both inhabit the same state, and the 12th Amendment makes it clear that if you do inhabit the same state, you can't get the electoral votes from that state, which is kind of, I guess you have to declare residency. Trump could do that. And I just think the whole thing is not going to happen with DeSantis, but there's speculation. But what I'm saying is there's plenty of great candidates for vice president right now that Trump could choose from. He has Sarah Huckabee Sanders. He has Tim Scott. Like, there's a lot of strong candidates. Marco Rubio, again, you get to the 12th Amendment thing. But this is a long list of people that he's deciding between. And I think if you look at someone and you go, they wrote a book about shooting their 14-month-old dog, Cricket, we don't need that. It's just an unnecessary bit of baggage, in my opinion.
73% of the audience believes, yes, she did eliminate herself from VP contention here.
This was part of her statement today. It says, the fact is, South Dakota law states that dogs who attack and kill livestock can be put down. Given that Cricket had shown aggressive behavior toward people by biting them, I decided what I did. Now, I know I'm highlighting the wrong thing here, but that's a weird sentence. I decided what I did. Whether running the ranch or in politics, I have never passed on my responsibilities to anyone else to handle. Again, this is, I don't like the way this is written. Even if it's hard and painful, I followed the law and was being a responsible parent, dog owner, and neighbor. As I explained in the book, it wasn't easy, but often the easy way isn't the right way. Your explanation isn't helping either. Like, this is just a disaster. If I'm her PR person, I'm just shaking my head going, who said this was a good idea?
Yeah. Again, like, why did this need to be put down? And even, you know what? And again,
do you mean put down like pen to paper?
Yes. I didn't even think about
no,
that.
No, I know you didn't. That's yeah. Why I was clarifying.
Why did this have to be written down and put into a book? And again, Even if it's legal, even all of this is accepted, it's legal, it's the farm, things happen. Yeah, all of that. Why did we have to mention this at all?
It kind of
goes. And furthermore, if you did have to mention it under some circumstances, just say, hey, you know what? I had to handle a situation where I had to put my dog down because it was attacking chickens. So I know tough decisions. And people are like, okay. You know, they'll kind of move past it. But to say, like, I made the choice to shoot the dog because I had to.
That's not the example that I would have in my back pocket. I would just keep that one. You know what it kind of goes to? This idea that I see often on the internet, on social media, which is we all know too much about each other. Like, there are certain things that you don't need to tell us. And I would definitely say killing Cricket is one of those things. We'll be right back. I want to talk about Jim Biden. Is he the Fredo of the Biden family, or are they all Fredo? We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Before I get into this story with Jim Biden, and it's a good story. It's an exclusive by Politico. They do a pretty good job of laying out Jim Biden's failed business venture, one of many. He's been a businessman for a very long time, and he's been involved with a lot of different industries. And so we're going to talk about that. But I thought a nice way to lead into it would actually be Maria Bartiromo's interview with Jim Jordan over the weekend. So for people who didn't see this, Jim Jordan is the House Judiciary Committee chair, and he is heavily involved. He's a representative from a congressman from Ohio, and he's heavily involved in the Biden investigation, but along with a lot of other investigations, weaponization of federal agencies against people. Just he does a very good job he seems to actually do a lot of the work. He reminds me of Senator Kennedy in the sense that he shows up prepared to these hearings. You can tell that he's up to his eyeballs and all of this stuff. And unfortunately for Jim Jordan, we are all collectively as conservatives exhausted by all of these hearings with all of these bombshell pieces of information that lead to absolutely nothing. Say it again. And Maria, over the weekend, vocalized that exhaustion and that fatigue and the feeling of nothing ever happens. No one is ever held accountable. The pendulum doesn't swing because we keep talking about the corruption of the Biden family, and yet there's no consequences. And so I wanted to play that, and then we're going to get into this big story about Jim Biden. Let's have Maria Bartiromo with Jim Jordan, Cut 9.
Well, look, I mean, at this point, American citizens are asking, what can you do about it? I mean, look, with all due respect, people are sick and tired of congressional investigations that go nowhere. People are sick and tired of letters being written and sent to the people who we know are bad in the first place. They want you to do something about it. You're an elected official. What can you do to right these wrongs?
Well, we've passed legislation out of the committee that would help remedy this situation, particularly the one in New York. But the president or vice president can move a case to federal court from when you do these state prosecutors who are going after someone for a political reason. So we're a legislative branch. We can't put anyone in jail. And I don't think the Biden administration, their DOJ is going to go after the people who need to go after. You're just not going to get that from Merrick Garland.
And listen, there are a lot of Congress people that I would say are more useless than Jim Jordan. Like, he's one of the good ones. And his overall point that we have a slim majority, there's not a lot they can do. They're not police officers. They're not, some of them are lawyers, but they're lawmakers. And there is only so much power that they have, especially with such a slim majority. And if Biden and his administration and his DOJ and Merrick Garland, if they don't want to pick up the ball and kind of run with it, then there is an endpoint to what Jim Jordan and James Comer and other people are able to do. But unfortunately, it doesn't change the perception from a lot of Republicans that they're all talk, no action. And I love that Maria pointed out the letters, Jared, because you know how I feel about the letters. It's like every other day, House Judiciary Committee sends open letter to lose the letters. Like, until you give me something I can work with, until you actually have something to tell me that someone's being held responsible here, I don't really care about the letters. It just seems like a lot of grandstanding and theater. And there is a degree to that no matter what. But I do think that Maria is on the money when she says people are getting sick of it. And she's someone who she must be getting real sick of it. Because if I remember correctly, she was on Fox and interviewing Trey Gowdy a lot. And he was like the original Jared, all talk, nothing to show for it. Not an insult to Trey Gowdy. I think he's a smart guy. But when I think of a lot of outrage and then never seeing any results and someone getting you really hyped up about something and then not being able to deliver, I do think of Trey Gowdy. And I think he was like the original Jim Jordan. And I don't think Jim Jordan's trying to do that. I think he really is trying to expose some of this corruption. But it doesn't matter what you're trying to do. It just matters what you do. And people are watching and going, I don't want to hear about this anymore. You know, I'm getting tired. And so with all that being said, there is an update on the Biden family that I think could potentially spice things up a little bit as far as these investigations go. I'm going to read directly from Politico because there's details involved in this and I don't want to get any of the information wrong. And before I get to Politico, I wanted to play a cut. We had Ben Weingarten on last week. We were talking about these college protests, these demonstrations, you know, from Columbia to Harvard. But we specifically focused on Columbia with Ben Weingarten because he's actually a graduate of Columbia. And he's disgusted with the university, along with Bob Kraft and so many other people. Now, Ben Weingarten mentioned something when we were talking about this. And he mentioned some of the funding that goes to these schools. And I wanted to play this as just a little appetizer to the Jim Biden story. Here's Ben Weingarten on the Grace Curley Show last week. This is Cut 14.
But actually, the largest foreign contributor to U.S. universities post 9/11 is Qatar. Who would have thought that it would be Qatar? Qatar has pumped billions of dollars into elite schools and non-elite schools, so-called, across this country for two decades. They're not alone. You obviously have the Saudis and many other regimes as well. Some of that funding goes to the Middle East Studies departments, which are really hotbeds and have long been hotbeds of not just quote-unquote anti-Zionist, but also anti-American fervor. They also fund faculty. And beyond that, they fund the schools more broadly.
Yeah, and I wasn't actually shocked by that just because I had seen a lot of reporting over the last couple of months about how much money Qatar dumps into D.C. and into lobbyists and politicians. So that didn't surprise me. But the reason I bring that up is because Jim Biden has a strong tie with the Qatari government or officials. So here's the headline. It says, fund managers indicates Jim Biden was in business with Qatari officials. New details, and I'm reading some of the highlights here. It's a really long story. It says new details about Jim Biden's foreign fundraising efforts are spilling out in a Kentucky bankruptcy court, where recent testimony indicates that President Joe Biden's brother, Jim, partnered with Qatari government officials in his quest to find money for U.S. healthcare ventures. This was one of his ventures. He was involved with the discotheque. He reminds me of like one of those contestants on The Bachelor where they just put underneath, because usually they'll say like stockbroker or doctor or, you know, they try to give you their job description. And occasionally you'll get a contestant, like a very good looking guy, and he's trying to win over the Bachelorette. He's trying to win the rose, and it will just say beneath it entrepreneur or business person. And you think, well, that could mean a whole lot of things. That's Jim Biden. His description would just be working on a lot of ventures, up to something. That would be his description on his business card. Jim Biden, I'm always up to something. And so he was trying to find money for U.S. healthcare ventures. He didn't have a lot of experience in healthcare, but that doesn't matter when your last name's Biden. The sworn testimony by fund manager, now remember this name, Michael Lewitt, who is a former business partner of Jim Biden's, attests that two companies that facilitated the efforts were part-owned by members of the Qatari government. One company, named in the testimony, partnered directly with Jim Biden in multi-year fundraising efforts. The second company provided financial backing for a series of loans that a hospital chain paid Jim Biden to arrange. He loves a venture. The alleged arrangements, stem from an effort... Freudian slip, stem from an effort by Jim Biden to raise money from Qatari sources for ventures in the U.S. beginning in the months after his older brother left the vice presidency. Now, the timing of this is important, okay? Not only because it's right when Joe Biden left the vice presidency, but the timing of this is also important because in June of 2017, Qatar's neighbors ganged up and cut diplomatic ties with the country. So they created this financial and physical blockade. And it kind of threw the country into a tailspin. And they were trying to make connections or kind of shore up connections with U.S. officials. And they began, and again, I'm referencing the Politico story here, showering well-connected Westerners with gifts and financial benefits. And, you know, if you're looking for a lame duck, if you're looking for someone who you can just look at and go, we'll be able to entice this person with gifts and money, you think of Jim Biden. You also think of Hunter Biden, but I don't think they were trying to be as obvious with the diamonds in the hotel rooms. They were trying to have a more subtle approach. So they thought, we'll go with Uncle Jim. The previously unreported testimony by fund manager Michael Lewitt about the ownership of the two companies, and they're called Platinum Group USA and Obermeyer Engineering Consulting, indicates that Jim Biden forged closer ties to Qatar's government than previously understood. Jim Biden was embarking on a foray into the healthcare business. Oh, that's another thing he loves. What do you think he loves more, Jared, ventures or forays?
He seems like a forayer to me.
Entrepreneur/forayer. Yeah, healthcare business in which he worked closely with troubled hospital chain AmeriCorps. Troubled indeed. So according to an anonymous source from AmeriCorps, former employee of AmeriCorps, said that Jim Biden and his partner said the Qatari officials had expressed an interest in investing more deeply in the U.S. healthcare sector. Because, of course, Jim Biden workshopped. Now, here's the big part. And then this is really all you need to know as far as I'm concerned. Jim Biden workshopped a draft letter to an official at the country's wealth fund, the Qatar Investment Authority. The draft letter from Jim Biden read in part, "My family could provide a wealth of introductions and business opportunities at the highest levels that I believe would be worthy of the interest of His Excellency. On behalf of the Biden family, I welcome your interest here." And you can read the rest about the money and how it went from one person to the other person and one consulting firm to another consulting firm. But I think that that is the gist of it. My family welcomes your money, your funds, your backing. And my brother, Joe Biden, who just finished being vice president, is on board. That's really what he's trying to say.
The highest levels is a bit of a red flag.
He's a walking red flag, Jim Biden. He's just everywhere he goes. I think even he knows it. Like, he and his wife, Sarah, I think there's so much to unpack. And you know what? It's funny because I do confuse Jim and Frank because they look so much alike and they both look exactly like Joe Biden. But again, I'm sticking with this, Jared. You want to say that one of them is like the dud, the Fredo? But they're all the Fredo. I guess Jim gets a slight edge on the other two just because of the failed discotheque. You know, that gives him, that's reminding me a little bit of the Vegas days and that kind of thing. But they're all really in content. Like, there's a competition here. And I don't know who beats who in the Fredo competition of the Biden family. And throw Valerie in, too. We don't want to be sexist. Valerie's making a play at it, too. Face it, the world is a scary place. It seems like the current administration is on a mission to make life more dangerous while at the same time making it harder for Americans to protect themselves. The FlipLock security door lock is here, and it can help you. It's unpickable, unbreakable. It's 10 times stronger than a deadbolt. It's really easy to use. And it doesn't cost a lot. I think that's a part of security that gets a bad rap, where people immediately associate protecting yourself or protecting your family with high costs. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, if you can do that, great. Set up surveillance cameras and find out after the fact that someone broke in. That's one thing. But you want a last line of defense that's not going to break the bank. And that is the FlipLock. Go to FlipLock.com. And check out how this device works. It's super simple, and it's very, very easy to use, easy to install. It's so trusted that Revere Public Schools installed FlipLock in their classrooms, and you can go to FlipLock.com and save 20% with code GRACE20. That's FlipLock.com and save 20% with code GRACE20, FLIPLOK.com. Don't forget to use GRACE20. It's already a reasonable price, but I want you to get that extra 20%, so use code GRACE20. When we come back, should we do a little where in the world is Kamala Harris? Because she's with she's with an interviewer who I'm going to say, Jared, is becoming the Walter Cronkite of our generation. Like, this woman is, she's getting all of the interviews with the Biden administration. Nobody else is, no one from NBC, from CNN, from, God forbid, the New York Times. Nobody can get near Kamala Harris and Joe Biden except for this world-class journalist. And we'll talk about it when we come back.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curly. This is the Grace Curley Show.
All right, everyone. I know what you've been waiting for. Where is the VP? You know, we're talking plenty about Trump's potential VPs, but then we forget that we have a VP right now, and her name is Kamala Harris. And she's always busy doing a whole lot of nothing. And so the only time that she'll sit down for an interview is if it's a real, real puff piece. Like if she's talking to, I don't even know, like did she talk to Trevor Noah at one point? She talks to these celebrities. Well, now Drew Barrymore once again snags an interview with someone in the Biden administration, with Kamala Harris nonetheless. What do you think that is, Jer? Why Drew Barrymore? What is it about Drew that has this administration just constantly reaching out to her for these hard-hitting pieces?
I mean, she probably doesn't have a lot of viewership. So, I mean, I don't even know where this show, I mean, like, I'm sure this show is picked up by some TV network. But, so you're not going to see, a lot of people aren't going to see this particularly. But, you know, with their love for Hollywood, she's old Hollywood royalty, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, so Kamala was sitting down with Drew Barrymore. And they actually...
Drew Barrymore was basically sitting in her lap.
She does that with everyone.
It was super weird.
She does that with everyone. So I see a lot of these cuts on Reels on Instagram. And Drew Barrymore, I don't know about her ratings. I have to assume she's doing pretty well if she got picked up again. Because the daytime talk show, you know, circuit, they'll just plop someone else in there. But she always invades people's personal space. That's like kind of her shtick. And it's not a shtick I'm on board with. But she's interviewing Kamala Harris and... I told you guys last week that CNN had this report about Kamala Harris's laugh. And I think that there's something being misunderstood about this, but let me play the cut first and then we'll talk. This is cut six, Jared.
You were asking me earlier about what it means to be like the first woman. And, you know, it's funny because people still got to get used to this, right? I mean, my staff, for example, sometimes they'll show me little things that just amuse me. Like, apparently, some people love to talk about the way I laugh.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I love your laugh.
Well, let me...
Well, of course you do.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not shocked that you're on board with her laugh. But I just want to point out something. I don't think the focus is necessarily on your laugh, but is more focused on the situations that you're laughing at, the inappropriateness of said laughter. Like, I don't have an issue with her having a belly laugh. Jared, you can attest to this. I don't have a great laugh. I've got a little bit of a, if I'm feeling tired one day and something makes me laugh, there's a lot of potential that I'm going to snort on air. I don't have a beautiful laugh by any means. But also, if you were giving me devastating news, if you were reporting that and I started giggling and laughing, that's a bigger issue than the sound of the laughter. Like, yes, I think she has a bit of a cackle, but I also just think it's weird that she's laughing at absolutely everything. She's talking about school buses and she's getting ready to laugh. Every single thing, from electric school buses to Venn diagrams to space, makes this woman giggly. And that's an issue. We'll be right back. We've got a lot to talk about in this last hour. Do not go anywhere.